Tuesday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast. More on our trade deadline preview series. Our sponsors today, Distilled Premium Denim. DSTLD.com, distilled.com/capspace gets you 10% off your first pair of fantastic jeans. And then Blue Apron, check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/capspace. A wonderful food delivery service is Blue Apron. All right, we're going to go through in alphabetical order here, do the Central Division, starting with the Chicago Bulls. And as always, Danny, you made me chuckle with one of your notes in the outline. Motivations, damned if I know.
I have no idea. You know, there are a couple of different, I was thinking about this today, ways that you can think about this Bulls team. And I like to think of it that they have a young core with older players around it. But I'm sure other people think of it the opposite way. And figuring that out and reconciling like who they're building around would explain a lot of this and also kind of clean up some of the problems they made over the summer.
Yeah, well, as has been documented ad nauseum yesterday on a podcast with Zach Lowe and Nick Friedel, if you're a Bulls fan, I thought that was interesting and worth listening to. I think, as we all would say, they have not been that good with that young core. Like, who is that young core? I mean, are you putting Jimmy Butler as part of that? Maybe, but he's 27 now, right? So that's a little bit of a stretch to consider him young, and you can say you're going to build around him, but you really only have two more years to do that realistically. Once he's 29, he's probably going to start falling out of this status that he improbably has reached as a top 15, maybe even lower end top 10 player in the league.
So that makes me think that especially if there's a realistic interpretation, which I think there is, that the Bulls can't get good enough to maximize that prime. Maximization is a big word, but making the conference finals, even making the NBA finals, would that make you more open to trading him?
Well, again, as Friedel talked about yesterday, they are not really sure that he's the guy from a leadership standpoint. He's really good on the floor. But again, we talked about this with the Hawks as well. What is really your goal as a team? Are you championship or bust all the time? That's supposedly how the Rockets and Celtics think. Are you happy with filling the coffers and just being good enough to be in the playoffs? It definitely seems like this has been the first year that the team really has not even had like this pie in the sky notions of contention. Nobody sees them that way. Supposedly there are more empty seats these days in the United Center, but this team always will make money with their TV deals, the size of the market, etc. They made plenty of money even in those down years after the dynasty. So that to me is the question. Do you want to go for just trying to be the fourth seed, or are you going to tear down completely? And I don't think they know the answer to that. I think there's a division on that. And maybe the ultimate answer to that is, well, how much can you get for Butler? I think it makes sense to listen on him for sure. But, you know, if you're not, and if you could get one of those Brooklyn picks, like this year's Brooklyn pick, you know, maybe that becomes a lot more realistic. But I also think that if you're trading away Butler, you better be damn sure that that's a top three pick, top two pick, maybe even close to the number one pick in the draft.
Boston and Philly are really the only teams I can think of that have high level assets that would not just completely neutralize the rest of their team, because they just, the way that they were built, they have those kind of things. I don't think Philadelphia is going to be in that market, though it would be awesome if they made a play for it. And so you listen, and if it's the right offer, if it bowls you over, then you take it. If not, you don't. And it all fits together. We talked this again, another parallel with the Hawks, because the Bulls have a lot of talented players that are going to be in various forms of free agency, and figuring out what they are and what they will be allows them to assess and recoup better value for that than if they have to wait until the end of the season.
I think that if there is a Butler move, it's more likely to be explored at the end of this year once they see how this team lines up, and maybe even after free agency is over too. Boston, if you take Butler now, you're punting on really getting anybody in free agency this year either. Now, Butler is better than anyone they're realistically going to get in free agency, even Gordon Hayward, but maybe you could get someone in free agency and then make the deal for Butler as well. He doesn't make that much money.
Right, so, or maybe you even get to keep the pick. So, I mean, at that point, if you can get, let's say, Gordon Hayward and the Nets pick, then that's a better team than just Butler.
Yeah, that's a great point too. So what about on the lower end? They have these guys who are expiring contracts, The one who I think could really help a team if they wanted to move on from him would be Taj Gibson. I think he would be excellent as an undersized center if the Raptors are a team that definitely could use him. And we had talked about maybe playing Millsap and Patrick Patterson together. Gibson is nowhere near as good defensively as Millsap is. He's not as quick on his feet as he used to be back in his prime when he could switch on to even a prime LeBron James and do slightly okay. He's going to be 32 in the offseason, but certainly someone who I think could help a team. And you're wondering if you're the Bulls, it probably would still, though, to me, take a first round pick to want to give up on him, because they could also re-sign him as well. His cap hold won't be enormous.
I would definitely listen, but as you said, the price has to be reasonable because he's played his whole career there. He's a good player. I think he'll age reasonably well if you don't expect him to be a starter the whole time. You know, I think that his skill set works well as a 15 to 20 minute a game guy as he wears down. You know, let's say he gets a 3-year deal. If you assume that, I think it'll work reasonably well. And he has value for good teams. So depending on how as you mentioned, the Raptors are an interesting one. Minnesota, if they hadn't gotten Jang, would have been
he'd help Boston too, actually.
He would.
I think would help Boston, yeah.
And so which of those teams would rather go smaller and give up, you know, like a lesser asset for him as opposed to bigger for, say, Nerlens Noel will be.
Did you say Washington for Taj Gibson?
No, but it makes some sense.
Yeah, I think he would be very solid there as well. Again, if
Washington, especially because they could re-sign him, you know, like that Washington is in that space. We talked about that in the one with the Southeast has a couple of those teams, Charlotte as well, that could benefit from getting somebody that they can re-sign.
Yeah, that might be, he would actually be an outstanding fit, I think, in Charlotte as well. And I like him as a second unit center because the fact that he doesn't shoot three-pointers, you know, I have an executive that I talk to pretty regularly and I agree, who says, if you can't shoot threes, you're a center. Doesn't matter how big you are, you know, none of that stuff, you're a center in today's NBA. And Taj isn't going to have the athleticism to just be your only center. Maybe he could work in concert with another stretch big as well at times in the front line, but
like I was thinking,
yeah,
about him,
he can't be your starting power forward. Your offense isn't going to be good enough,
right? Like I think you could play him spot minutes with a guy like Porzingis if they were to structure it a little bit differently. I think that would be a nice little combination for the Knicks. I'm not saying they should give up a first round pick for him or anything crazy like that, but I could see him working with a stretch big if you ran the set right.
What about Nikola Mirotic? He's going to be a restricted free agent at the end of this season. Pretty low cap hold. He will be around 11 million or so, 190% of his current salary. Would you give up a first round pick for him if you were another team, knowing that you would have his restricted rights?
Not at the moment, because I'm not sure that he's a starter. I mean, I would say that's pretty reasonably likely that he isn't. And he turns 26 in February, so pretty soon. And if you're not at that level at this point, it's a lot harder to say it. Now, he could do better in a different circumstance, but you trade for a guy knowing that, not hoping that it's possible.
Yeah, what does he need to do better to be a starter? I think he just needs to hit his shots more. He has, these last 2 years, because they've had no spacing, been pretty much relegated to standing out in the perimeter. They've played him at the three sometimes these last 2 years. That's not really a good use of his skills either. He can do more off the dribble than he's shown. I mean, you look back to his first year when he used to get fouled all the time. Part of that was BS foul drawing. But I think there is more there than we've been able to see from him these past 2 years. It is a little telling that he has not been able to seize that starting power forward position, even though the organization has clearly wanted him to do that these last 2 years. But I think there is a player there that could turn into a starter, but you know, I think it's a 50% chance and maybe not a high level starter, which is what we had hoped he would be when he first came over. So you don't think he would be worth giving up a first round pick for if you were another team?
No, but I'm pretty stingy with those. So I would go in that direction. And because with a power forward, if they're not a starter, it gets a lot dicier in terms of value, because you can play a three, a bigger three as a backup power forward. Whereas at center, you just always need guys there.
Obviously, Rajon Rondo talked that he is not long for this Bulls team. He's been playing a little bit better on the second unit lately with more shooting around him, but he has that $3 million guarantee for next season. Nobody is going to take him. He is either just going to be on the team for the end of this year, or maybe he's going to get bought out. He does have a pretty early guarantee date. I think it's June 30th. So he really has no motivation to agree to a buyout either. Like, why not just force them to release him on June 30th and get his money for next year, and then also go find another contract during free agency if in fact someone is willing to give him one, which you have to doubt perhaps at this point. And I mean, none of these other young guys, I mean, what if they wanted to actually try to get something that would help them get better this year? I don't see them necessarily doing that. That is, I mean, even when they were good, they didn't really do anything like that.
They have all their own first round picks, and they have that weird Sacramento pick where it's a first if the Kings finish outside of the 10 worst records. Technically, if they have one of the top 10 picks, it's a little bit different. And then they get seconds otherwise. So they could trade that, but they also only have, in the next 3 years, they only have their 2018 second. So they don't really have those sorts of middling assets. They should listen and have constructive conversations also on a lot of their other young guys. MCW. Yeah.
Doug McDermott might be someone that, but I think they still are really believers in him. They're believers in Mirotić. Carter Williams, I don't think, and he could maybe help a team more than he could help the Bulls, even though he's now been out of the rotation again, somewhat inexplicably. He could maybe help a team that just needs like some defense at the guard position. I thought his defense actually was okay. And someone who can score a little bit in the pick and roll even if they can't shoot.
Well, especially because he's a restricted free agent, and if he was on an over the cap team, they could use that for leverage. That was the idea that I had for the Wizards with Trey Burke, because if you have a not great player that's restricted, their cap hold is not the biggest thing in the world, as long as their qualifying offer is enough that you would be willing to sign him to it. And MCW on a team like the Wizards in that way would actually make sense, because they could just sit there, scare other teams off by threatening to match. He ends up getting a low offer, or maybe even like Deion Waiters, where the market just evaporates and you get a backup point guard for really cheap.
Or maybe even takes the qualifying offer, which is not the end of the world. You know, you still get him for another year at that point. Yeah, so again, some of those capped out teams, Charlotte, maybe another one too, that feels like they could use just a little bit more at backup point guard, a little more defense there. But you know, again, he's not playing for the Bulls, and he's not some world beater. What are you going to get for him? You know, second rounder, maybe. Certainly not a first rounder. You know, remember, he just got traded for Tony Snell, who's similarly out of favor.
Would you consider going after him if you were Sacramento?
Yeah, that actually might be an interesting fit there. Although, I mean, just his lack of shooting is so bad. But I think just see if he can develop his personality-wise. I don't think I like his fit in Sacramento. He's not considered to be the easiest guy in the world to get along with, or to play with for that matter. So I think bringing him in somewhere with a stronger culture might be more what would work well. But it's probably too much time on him. I don't expect them to do anything either way, I think is what it boils down to.
Right. They'll be a listener, but not much of an actor unless somebody does something ridiculous with their team. And the lack of clear evaluations, from what I can tell, with their players makes it so much harder.
All right, we'll move on to the Cavs momentarily. But first, this from Distilled. DSTLD is how you spell it. Pronounce Distilled. DSTLD.com. Distilled.com/capspace gets you 10% off your first pair of jeans. Like so many of our sponsors, jeans are another product where there are great quality jeans available, but they really cost more than they should. It's a pair of pants. It shouldn't be $300. There's nothing that's in the actual materials and craftsmanship and design that's used that actually is worth $300, other than the fact that it's just, that's what our society says you should do, is buy these jeans for $300 and go buy them at a department store and pay a bunch of money for the air conditioning and the displays and the people who work at the department store and all that. Now you can get the same quality starting at just $75 with Distilled. They use the same fabrics, factories, wash houses as the best known brands and designers, but they skip the markups and they skip the middlemen. I really like my pair. They're very substantial feeling, fit me perfectly. I've recommended them to a lot of people. They really like them as well. And they also have a cool selection of outerwear, leather jackets, and t-shirts. So you can also utilize free shipping and free returns until you find the perfect pair for you, if for some reason they don't fit you well. But it's your answer to elevated style without elevated prices. Go to DSTLD.com, distilled.com/capspace right now, and that'll get you 10% off your first pair. Five letters, DSTLD.com, distilled.com/capspace. So Cleveland, a subject of much discussion. I'm not really that interested in the LeBron comments about Charles Barkley, although I in large part agree with LeBron, who I think is the second best player of all time. And despite the fact that he has some foibles, is a wonderful American success story, as are the people he works with. But it does show, again, a continuing frustration. They lost to the Mavericks without Kevin Love on the road, were not particularly competitive, couldn't stop the Mavs. Tristan Thompson really struggled in that one. He was 0 for, he did not attempt a shot from the field, had one offensive rebound, and was negative 22 in 25 minutes last night. And it's not like they have a ton coming off the bench in terms of centers either. And that's with Dirk Nowitzki starting at center for Dallas. So you'd think that Thompson could dominate him on the glass. Not saying that he's necessarily the problem. He earned that great contract that he has with his play in the finals last year, even if he never plays another minute for Cleveland. But they want to win now, and they have some assets to do it. I think we've talked about this ad nauseum, but just to reiterate, what does this team need to compete with Golden State?
Talent. I mean, they need starting caliber players. I would say a perimeter defender is probably their largest need, and LeBron might disagree with that. Backup playmaker, as he puts it, is something that would be good to have, but not as essential, because they could just stagger LeBron. Yeah.
And that guy better be able to shoot too, right? Like, there's a rumor that they're involved with TJ McConnell, and that doesn't do any good for me, because if that guy is almost certainly going to be playing with LeBron in the second unit, and if you can just leave him at the three-point line, what's the point?
It'd be more fun if it was Josh Smith or Lance Stevenson, though.
Yeah, they supposedly are having a big workout today, including Lance Stevenson, Kirk Heinrich, Mario Chalmers returning from that Achilles injury, to see if any of them could help them. And Chalmers, certainly, if he were able to be healthy, would be on that list. But unfortunately, that has not been the case for guys who do their Achilles in their late 20s, early 30s, as Chalmers is. But all that aside, let's talk about first, like, what they actually have to trade to get something, if that's what they wanted to do.
They can't trade a first round pick for a long time because of the dual obligations to Portland from the Anderson Varejao Channing Frye trade and Atlanta from the Kyle Korver trade. They don't have a second until 2019.
What is the first round they can trade? It's 2021, right?
Because I think it's 2021,
or
I believe.
Technically 2 years after the 2019 pick. And, you know, that's not that far away. Teams have traded 2021 picks before. Like, they could do that potentially. And that's a pick, depending on the level of protection, that might actually be pretty valuable. I mean, LeBron will be, what is he, 32 now? So he'll be 37 by then. Hard to imagine there'll be a finals team at that point, if he, in fact, is even still around.
He might even be retired, depending on what he wants to do.
No, because he's going to get a 5-year max contract.
Oh, that's right.
After this year. And so he will not be retiring. He'll be making like $45 million a year.
Well, so he's actually, well, it won't be after this year. It would have to be another year, because he signed a 2-year deal. But
yeah. Right. But remember, the whole reason they changed the over 36 rule to over 38 is so he could get that 5-year max deal. Next year. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So that's the first rounder they can trade. And you were saying about the seconds?
They have a second in 2019, and that's their only one between now and 2021. So not a lot they could do there. Chetty Osman, who they drafted in the second round a couple years ago, is an intriguing asset, but not a great one from what I've heard. I think you know more about him than I do. And they don't have a ton of other young players. So when I look at it, they're either trading like a big move like Love for Melo or something in that range, or they're do kind of another Island of Misfit Toys thing, where they're taking on somebody in one of their trade exceptions and maybe throwing a small little asset back.
Osman has been okay this year, but he might entice someone. He's probably not worth like a first round pick level, but he's probably maybe worth more than like your typical second would be. They've been trying to peddle Jordan McRae like he's an asset. Nobody's biting. He's not an asset, really. He's just a guy in a minimum contract, despite the fact that he was a volume scorer in summer league. I mean, should we talk about the Melo thing again? I mean, we hit that on the Twitter NBA show a little bit. They are quite limited in terms of how much it would cost them in terms of tax, even if they were to do Melo for Love. And again, I think that's probably more of an off-season thing that might happen after it, and if they do flame out in this offseason, or in this postseason, rather.
That makes more sense as timeline for both sides, just because they have that time to evaluate what they really have. And the Knicks also have a very different world then in terms of opening, because then teams with cap space could potentially be involved. And I don't know exactly what Melo's list of teams is, but I think that would probably help. And
yeah,
and
Melo also could waive his trade bonus voluntarily to help facilitate the trade this summer, which he would not be able
once the new CBA kicks in. Correct.
Yeah, unless it was just to make the math work on a trade. That's the only way you can waive a trade bonus right now.
Love or something related to that, yeah. From what we're hearing in terms of the rumors about what could be involved in a Clippers trade for Melo, I would say Love is a substantially better return than what they can get from the Clippers if the Knicks are not involved.
Right, and the Knicks would do that deal in a second, and that's why my thinking is that the Cavs could be able to extract plenty more assets from the Knicks as well, get a little less top heavy as shit, as LeBron would say, and that way you could either move on, you know, you could maybe get a pick from the Knicks or some of their role players who might help a little bit, that kind of thing, and that would enable you then to just have more versatile athletes, more guys who can defend on the perimeter a little bit, even more shooting, maybe another traditional big man, which they don't really have, all those things to just kind of, because I do still feel, despite the fact that Love played very well to start the year, he's regressed a little bit of late. It's not been good posting up at all, actually, as KP noted in his piece the other day. His skills, his passing, his playmaking, his offensive rebounding are largely wasted in this system because he's playing with Kyrie and LeBron. And so I think to spread his talent out across multiple positions would be more useful. But I think politically they just cannot trade Kevin Love this season after they just won a championship with him, even though, let's be honest, he didn't do anything really to help them in that series against the Warriors other than that one last stop against Steph Curry.
Didn't he have one pretty good game? Was it five? It was somewhere in 5, 6, or 7. He had one like nice stretch, but I can't remember when it was.
Well, he was concussed for a large part. I don't think he played. I mean, he had like some plays, like he had some nice offensive rebounds in game 7, but I would have to go back and look. I don't remember him having like one a big game.
But it wasn't a monster game or something like that. No. That was LeBron and Kyrie's territory.
So I mean, you're looking at PJ Tucker type of players now. We've targeted him for a while as a guy who can switch. Not a great shooter, really more of a corner three-point shooter, and not even that good a one at that. Is someone who they could maybe seek to re-sign with bird rights if he were to get traded to them. Anybody else who pops out to you as just someone they could pursue? I mean, is there anyone that you see would just be worth trading a first-round pick for?
No, not for them.
That, like a pending free agent? Let me look at the list here and confirm that.
If they could pull, see, the other problem with them is that they don't have that many of those middling assets. So Jameer Nelson, yeah, maybe he would help them, but I certainly wouldn't give up a first for him. And yeah, they don't, without all their second round picks, broadly speaking, are terrible because they're a good team. And unless they were, I don't think I'd give up Chetty for Jameer Nelson. Like, that's not a competent return for me, especially because Jameer is a regular season guy and the regular season doesn't matter that much to me if I'm Cleveland.
Do you think there's any way that they would have enough ammunition to get Serge Ibaka?
You're saying without giving up any of their best three?
Yes.
I don't think so. Unless
what if they threw in their 2021 pick unprotected? Osman, they would have to make the salaries match, so that would probably include Iman Shumpert. He's really the only thing that they don't need, unless they wanted to move Kyle Korver again. But they could only do that, I think, if he were not aggregated.
Correct.
With anybody else in the trade. You know, they could Chris Anderson, James Jones. They could get there. They'd have to pay a lot more probably, and they would only have to get to four-fifths of Ibaka's salary to take him back as a tax team.
If they really wanted to make like a 2013 All-Star team, they'd be pretty monstrous with Ibaka. But we talked about his limitations recently and the idea that he offensively, he's probably more valuable as a center, and then defensively we're not really sure what he is right now. But Shumpert, if Orlando was pragmatic and realized that Cleveland's 2021 pick is a fascinating gamble and possibly a worthwhile one, considering how hard it's going to be for them to get better over this time, so just age-related regression is going to hurt them a lot, that would be a move. But if they're assuming they're keeping Hennigan and everybody else, that is not the move you make when you're at the end of your rope as a GM to say, hey, let's wait until 2021. Because you're probably not going to be there.
Tyreke Evans maybe would be someone that they could target if LeBron is really serious about wanting more of this playmaking. I don't think that's what their problem is, but he's a pending free agent. I think that Omri Caspi could really, really help them.
I'd love Caspi.
Although the Caspi experiment in Cleveland did not go very well the first time. None of those people are there anymore now. As a guy who could defend and hit shots, play as a small ball four, it might be useful. Those type of players are who... So I think that it just is a question of whether they want to commit that 2021 first rounder, because they just don't have much other than that. And those guys aren't going to fit into... I mean, it really would have to be Shumpert probably going out in terms of matching salary. I think they'd be okay with that.
Along those lines.
Shumpert just isn't good enough on offense, though.
No, what I'm saying is it hurts their value, because I'd say he's a net negative in terms of player plus contract right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Teams are fundamentally optimistic about their cap space, and so you're not... If they had an expiring contract of exactly the same number, it'd be much more valuable than Shump at this point. Because even the Magic, while we can talk about whether they should be optimistic or not, that's the way they think about their own space. And also worth considering for Cleveland is the marginal difference between a player they would give up a first for and somebody who could get bought out. Because Cleveland, particularly for a 2 through 4, will be of a great destination because they're looking for guys. They have minutes there. It's a way to rehab your value. Those players are also probably going to get minutes in the regular season too. Yeah.
So Jeff Green could be one of those guys if he were to get bought out in...
If I were Jeff Green, I would certainly do that. You know, I would leave some money on the table, go somewhere. Probably not the Clippers, though that would be the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah, Deron Williams would be another one, too. So I don't know if any of these guys, maybe Ibaka, but
what about
would be
Bogut?
Sexy enough. Yeah, maybe. I mean, he's not going to play at all there, probably. I mean, he's not going to play anywhere because he's got a lot of these nagging injury concerns. So
that's not where I would go if I were bought out, but just to add a little bit to this drama, it'd be fun.
All right, let's move on to Detroit here. Unless you have anything else to say on Cleveland, I think that's about all I had for them.
Nah, not really. Detroit is similarly not interesting, just in the sense that I don't think they're going to do anything crazy. I mean, if they did, then they start to get real fun. But I would say their goal is to stay in the playoff mix and under the tax long term if they can pull off that double. They have all their own first round picks, no additional picks. They do not have their second rounders. This surprised me. I didn't realize it was this many. They do not have their second rounders in 17, 19, and 20. And this year they're over the cap, under the tax, and next year they're going to be right at the level depending on what happens with Caldwell Pope.
Yeah, they almost certainly will be over. They, with their commitments, and we'll assume that Aaron Baines were to opt in. If he doesn't, they get a little more breathing room. But they're basically around $8 million under the tax right now, and that includes Caldwell Pope's cap hold, which is only $9 million. He's going to get $20 million a year, probably, if not more than that. And in that case, you're over. And this team is not good enough, really, to be paying the tax for. Now, they could probably move Baines pretty easily. The Boban, I don't know about him. Ish Smith, they still need. So they've got their first round pick still that'll be coming in as well. They have all their first rounders going forward. I mean, other than just getting off of some long term salary for next year, and John Luehr is starting for them, so they're probably not going to move on from him. Marcus Morris doesn't make anything. Maybe they would want to move Tobias Harris, but he's their only decent backup wing. So I don't really see them doing very much here, and they just maybe see whether Baines opts in or not, and then maybe they could make a tax avoiding move, but they have all the way until next trade deadline to do that.
They have a long time, and there should be some flexibility with a couple teams to make that happen. The one additional thing I would say is that, as being somebody who is not the biggest fan of him, I would be seriously talking to people about Reggie Jackson and hoping that somebody else overvalues him, because Reggie Jackson is the type of player that could be overvalued by a different GM, and if you can sell high on him for whatever reason, if somebody still values him that way, do it.
I mean, they really have been better with Ish Smith on the floor for a lot of the year. I think Reggie can be better than he has been, but there had been some discussions of chemistry issues. But you're not willing to just dump Reggie Jackson, right?
Oh, like, hell no.
And would just a middling first round pick be enough for him?
My logic with him would actually be that you probably wouldn't trade him for a pick. You trade him for a different player, maybe even at a different position, and the equivalent of a challenge trade, and say, we'll be able to figure it out from point guard, and that depth would open up our rotation a little bit.
Yeah, another reason they might want to move some salary would be so they could use their full mid-level exception this year. as well, which I think actually might get you someone this year, which it hasn't in past years. Now, it's not going to get you a starter who's necessarily going to make a difference, but that might be another reason why they would want to just try to move on from somebody. And maybe, you know, someone like Baines could be useful for, again, a team like the Wizards. I think Baines is a little overrated. He's been better this year than he has been in the past, but he's also getting pretty old. I think he's over 30 now. So, but a team like the Wizards, Charlotte, these teams that just kind of need something as a backup big man who can play a little bit, and his contract's not that bad, making $6.5 million this year.
Baines is 30 right now. He'll be 31 for most of next season.
Yeah, so a good time to move on from him, I think. Sell high on him. It's his value will never be higher. Even if you could get a second rounder for him, I'd be happy with that. I mean, I guess they may feel like they need him just to make the playoffs this year. There are the issues with Drummond's free throw shooting. They feel like they need to have a viable backup center. But Lure can play there in a pinch. Boban, if the guy's too big, you can play Boban. If they're small, you can go with Lure. I don't think it would be the end of the world to move on from Baines. And as far as Reggie Jackson, I don't think they would want to give up on him. He's in many ways Van Gundy's signature acquisition, and he is a guy who at least gives them some more upside potentially. If you move on from him, yeah, you might not be that much worse this year, but if you're talking about the next couple of years, I mean, what are you going to do at point guard? They would not have a way, even if they moved on from him probably and took back very little. I mean, I don't think there's really any teams
they can't get under the cap.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they could. Let's see. They really probably could not do that. If they moved on from Baines and from Jackson, you're still only looking at not that much room, like not enough to acquire a starter in free agency. It's possible that a team like the Nets would be okay with just taking him into cap space, but they don't have any assets to send back either. I mean, maybe you could try to get like Caris LeVert or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or something from the Nets in exchange for Jackson. But they still do have Lin on the team. He hopefully will heal at some point with this hamstring issue. So I mean this is probably going too far for them. I don't think they're going to do anything.
I don't either. Let's move on to the Pacers.
Well, first let's move on to Blue Apron. What'd you make this week?
Had some awesome, first time I've ever made anything like that. It was technically hoisin chicken, so kind of like a modification of teriyaki chicken with bao. So the steam buns that had a little slice in it was awesome.
That is sitting in my refrigerator right now, actually. I may try and make it tonight. Was it really good?
I enjoyed it quite a bit, and it had a carrot thing on the top of it. I can't remember if it was pickle. I can't remember exactly what the process was.
Marinated carrots, right? Yeah,
that sounds right.
I love bao. I'm a big bao guy. A lot of good bao places in the Bay Area, but not something I ever thought I'd be making at home. And that's what's cool about Blue Apron, is you make all kinds of cool stuff that you never thought you'd be making at home. They ship you the ingredients. It's perfectly portioned out, so you don't have to waste time going to the store. You don't have to waste food by buying more stuff than you need at the store. At $10 per person per meal, just a little bit under that, it's in many cases less expensive than going to the store, especially when you consider the amount of time that you're spending going there, the gas you're using to go there, etc. So it's just a wonderful food delivery service. It's been a great chance for my girlfriend and I to cook together, learn some new recipes. The ones that I've really liked, we actually have made again with some small modifications because we really like them a lot. Just a lot of great new flavors. And the way to get started with them, blueapron.com/capspace will get you your first 3 meals free with free shipping. And of course, let them know that you came from us, that /capspace URL. Easy to remember because we talk about capspace all the time on the program. blueapron.com/capspace. Yeah, so let's get to those Pacers. This is a team that when you look at their core, you feel like they maybe should be better. Miles Turner is a wonderful center. Paul George has taken a little bit of a step back this year, perhaps in part due to some of the personnel that's been added. Thaddeus Young is an okay power forward. Their bench has not really been very good so far this year. They're playing with two bigs off the bench. I mean, I think like a stretch four off the bench would be something that could really help them a lot. And in terms of their cap sheet going forward, some of the concerns that they will have, including Jeff Teague's cap hold, which should be about $13 million, and assuming that Rodney Stuckey opts into his $7 million for next year, which he almost certainly will, having not played almost all this year with a hamstring injury, they're only looking at about $13 million in space. If Teague were to move on, on, then they're looking at about $26 million or so. Could maybe increase that slightly with some of the non-guarantees that they have if they wanted to move on from Kevin Serafin, Glenn Robinson III, who they would probably keep, George Niang. But given all that, that's not like they haven't really done that well with their free agent signings, as we all know. Could potentially be willing to take on some salary here to get a little bit better. It's not like any of these teams in the East are such juggernauts. I think they match up extremely well with Toronto if that were to be the 2-7 again this year. They're not that far away to move up another echelon. I mean, they're not going to be making the finals, but they could maybe with a move get themselves to be kind of in that, hey, good a chance as anybody at getting to the East finals.
Their payroll flexibility certainly helps in that way because they don't have to be trapped into certain values of player contracts. They can be more flexible, but they're also kind of, they're in this weird place because Paul George could theoretically sign a designated veteran extension later on. You know, like that's something that could happen with the new CBA. But, you know, he's talked a lot about how unhappy he is, and spending that sort of thing to win now, unless you're trying to woo him, trying to convince him to come back, is precarious because you're spending short term. Miles Turner's young, that if you wanted to retool, you could certainly do that as well.
Yeah, I think they need to try to make themselves as good as they can around Paul George. And I think there's a couple of pretty easy ways to do that. One would be upgrading at shooting guard, just getting like a real knockdown shooter available. CJ Miles can do that. He's been starting recently, but he's injury prone, probably shouldn't really be playing more than 20-25 minutes a game. He played 40 and then played 20, and now he's questionable with a knee injury for this next game. He has been playing over Monte Ellis. Monte Ellis, I think, is pretty much just done at this point as an effective player. His usage is really low, his efficiency is really low, and he's bad on defense. He's not helping you win games, even in a bench role. So I think that's the other thing they could look to do is a stretch four off the bench or another wing who kind of combo forward type, or they could go for a starting shooting guard, move Miles to the bench, hopefully move Ellis totally out of the rotation, although I don't know if they would have the balls to do that. Any such players available at all?
If we haven't done the Atlantic yet, but we've talked a little bit about the Knicks with all the Melo stuff, and I've said that it would be logical for them to try to retool around Porzingis, and that Courtney Lee is just not the right fit for the Knicks long term. So he would be a fascinating option for them. Shoots the ball well, defends, isn't an incredibly high usage player. I think he could fit well with Paul George. The asset trade back could be a little bit complicated, but I think in terms of fit, it works.
Yeah, Indiana right now actually has $4 million in cap room still too, so they have some wiggle room in terms of matching salary. Lance Thomas, another guy who I think might be able to help them a little bit, although again, to take on that contract might be a little bit much. He has not really been healthy this year, had a career year last year, wasn't good before that.
I'm guessing you'd like Jared Dudley there.
Yeah, actually. He would be, I think he would be excellent there. And again, for a team that can't get free agents, just a guy, they also just need some more smart guys on this team who know how to play, pass, be in the right spot, hit a shot. Like that would be, I think. And then he also could train Niang to sort of be the new Jared Dudley.
And speaking of all that, how they need a smart player who can move well, why not Nick Young?
Yeah.
I mean, he actually does make sense in terms of just the basic, just pull. I wouldn't necessarily want him with Paul George because Paul George would just throttle him, but a good player to have on their team.
Yeah, backup point guard, another place they could upgrade. Aaron Brooks is eminently attackable in the playoffs whenever he's in the game defensively, not a passer. Yeah, just more passing on this team would be great. The question is just, again, what are you willing to give up? Are they at a place, I mean, before we even start talking about specific players, I mean, are they at a place where giving up another first round pick would be a good idea? Remember, they are out one already because they traded, they're not out one, but they're out of a young player in the pipeline already because they traded the pick that became Caris LeVert to Brooklyn to get Thaddeus Young to begin with.
They also have this weird obligation because I believe it's in that same trade where they have a reverse protected second round pick, which means that the Nets get it whenever it's in the top 15 of the second round. And while that sounds cool, it's also a big burden because it's that way from 2017 to 2022, meaning they basically can't trade a second round pick for the next while.
Yeah. They could trade the unprotected part of it, but
sure.
But yeah,
you're right. They can trade outside of that. They could trade it in the part that they're retaining. Yeah.
But nobody wants a pick that's longer than that's higher than 45 in the second round anyway, that those aren't worth anything. Yeah, it's tough for me to say. I think that it depends what you want to be too as a team, but especially with Paul George potentially going to free agency. Now, presumably, if they can offer him the designated max, he would sign it, but he might not make an All-NBA team this year. And then he would have to make it so then they could not offer him the designated veteran extension next year before he goes into free agency. So then he would actually have to become a free agent. You would hope that he would qualify by making an All-NBA team next year. And then if he doesn't do that, he is a free agent and you can't offer him with that much more money than everybody else. You could end up losing him. I mean, maybe this is, and Paul, I don't think that he's like that fired up to be like the seventh seed. If they even make that, you know, they're right on the precipice of that still. I think I might consider trading away a protected first round pick to try and get someone who would help. I'm just not really sure who that is. And it would have to be someone, because it's Indiana, they're worried about losing guys in free agency. They're not going to want to overpay going forward, but it would have to be really someone who's under contract. And Jared Dudley, is you wouldn't do a first round pick for him. Nope. And you mentioned that their seconds are somewhat encumbered. I mean, maybe they could do something like a Glenn Robinson for Jared Dudley and just take the salary off to throw someone else in, like Serafin or whatever, to match. Anyone else who comes to mind that they could be going after?
Not really. They're really, I think they're more bargain jumping and just seeing if they can get the right guy. But you're right, if they threw in the first round pick, they could be in the mix just for people. But again, it's a hard year for that, especially because the player that they will acquire will almost definitely make them better, which means their first round pick gets worse.
Yeah, and usually if a guy is on a good contract and was signed before 2016, he's on a good team, that's someone that they're going to want to keep. And then if it was someone who is signed this offseason, he's such a bad contract that you're not giving up a first round pick to acquire such a player either. But I mean, they could be another potential like Omri Caspi destination. But again, are the Kings going to want to just give up on him? They have full bird rights on him. A second rounder probably doesn't get that done. I mean, is Glenn Robinson going to get that done? I mean, that's really the only youngish player that they might throw in who's other than Turner that's actually even worth anything. And it's arguable whether he is even worth anything.
I've got one for you. In the abstract, how much better do you feel over the next couple of years Eric Bledsoe will be than Jeff Teague?
Well, he's under contract. That helps.
It does. he will be on your team.
He's younger. He can help. He's a better defensive player. I do want a guy who's a better shooter as my point guard, but Eric Bledsoe's been awesome. Like I don't know that they have the ammunition to get him.
Would you give up their 2017, their 2019 firsts, and then something else of like Glenn Robinson or something like that for him?
They would probably have to take back one of my bad contracts. They would probably have to take back like Monte Ellis then too, I think, for me to want to do that.
I don't think the Suns need to be hoarding their space. So, but I that is more on the ambitious side of something that I would consider. Even though Bledsoe might not age super well, he's good now, and it would fit in very well with the idea of Paul George being somebody who has the ball in his hand sometimes, but not full time. Bledsoe fits in very well with that.
Yeah, I'm thinking a little more incremental than that. They traded for Teague thinking that they could potentially re-sign him, that he would help. He's been okay this year. It's really one of these situations where they've got Teague, Young, George, and Miles Turner, and then they just don't really have that much left around those guys. So maybe just upgrade in those areas, especially with their bench. I think that's kind of more what I'm looking at if they want to get better this year.
That's fair.
But then, of course, the question becomes, what is really the point there? I mean, if you look at some of the net ratings on their team, right? When Miles Turner is on the floor, 4.4 net rating. That's pretty damn good. Paul George on the floor, 3.5 net rating. Not bad. You know, that's like right in there with all these other teams. And then you've got Al Jefferson, negative 8.5 net rating when he's on the floor. Kevin Serafin, negative 10.7. So they don't, like, their backup bigs haven't been good. Their backup wings haven't been good. They don't have any kind of a backup point guard who can play. When they have their starters on the floor, they're a good team. They just got to improve the bench. But then again, the question becomes, is it worth giving up something as big as a first rounder just to do that? I mean, maybe if you could get multiple players who can help you who are under contract and get rid of some of your bad salary and throw in that pick as a sweetener, maybe that's the kind of deal that could improve them this year and for the next couple of years, get them into the mix again a little bit in the East.
And that's also why we talked before about the idea of like the weird collection of guys that Miami has, why Indy doesn't make sense for them because they're not under contract and they wouldn't have bird rights. But they would help. Almost all those guys would help.
Let's get to the Milwaukee Bucks right now. We're looking great, looking like they could get into the mix for a 4 or 5 seed. Have swooned since then. Now right projected at 37 wins, right on the outside of the playoff race by 538. Chris Middleton's return supposed to happen around the All-Star break. But really, the long-term issues with this team remain, and that is, to me, they don't have a great option at point guard. They don't have a great option at center. Who on this team is really good besides Jabari Parker, Giannis, and Chris Middleton? And they just have so much money tied up in the rest of their roster. Giannis, they don't really have any cap flexibility going forward for a long time because they're going to have to pay Giannis, pay Jabari. Middleton will still be under contract. They got these three centers who are making a combined $40 million. Monroe, he'll probably opt in. I'm not sure who, I don't think any of those centers are really very tradable to get much back. I would be trying to dump one of those three guys if I could, but I think they need Monroe at least. Plumlee or Hinton, you could dump one of the two of those, but nobody's going to want them. It's interesting. They do have a lot of young guys. They have Thonmaker. Maybe what they could do is try to trade a pick that's a couple of years out for when they're going to be good. Lottery protect that, and maybe you can bring something back in that would help for this year, and then maybe you can buy low on someone like Serge Ibaka. I think we mentioned that in the Southeast. Bring him in, and then if he fits well, you could look to re-sign him, or if it's another wing or a point guard player who can shoot, those sorts of things.
They run into a problem because I still think that they, to get close to their defensive ceiling, they need to have a center that can play on that end, but the amount of guys, they're not going to be able to get a two-way center. Like, that's just not possible. So maybe you probably go with 2 one-way guys and just use them as needed. Hopefully one of the players they already have on roster can handle one of those roles. Monroe certainly can be an offensive point in that. I don't know who the perfect fit for either of their needs is. In my head I've been running through the idea of them trading a first for Nerlens for a while now, but I don't think it'd be perfect. But I mean, I just want to see that. I think it'd be fascinating in a lot of different ways. And I would love to see them take a real swing here, but I don't expect it, especially with them falling off now, because they can fall back on the idea that, oh, well, we're young and we're doing better than expectations, so that's fine. And if they could keep their pick for this year, if they're willing to take their foot off the gas pedal, they could really make some moves down in the rotation and get a top 10 pick, get a top 6 pick, maybe even, but they're not going to do that.
No, nor should they. I mean, Giannis is just too good.
Sure.
You don't want to bench him now.
For that purpose, but yeah, it's more just taking advantage of the situation should it present itself. It just hasn't presented itself. But like, would you be supportive if theoretically, this is again getting in the same question we talked about with the Pacers, of trading away their first for the right guy, but the salaries are even harder for them than for the Pacers?
Yeah, it is, because everyone that they could send out, I mean, maybe Delly would be tradable. He's probably about properly paid, maybe a little bit over, but not that much. For most 2016 summer contracts, he looks okay. Teletovic, actually, like Delly and Teletovic, I think are both players who are appropriately enough paid and could help a team. And I do think that they are really criminally underutilizing Teletovic right now. I don't know if that's a great reason to trade the guy, but he could be better on another team. A team could identify him as someone who could help them if you need some shooting off the bench. Like, Teletovic actually, I think, would be great on the Pacers, for example. I think he would be really good for them as a backup stretch four. Same thing with the Wizards as well. I think he would be good there. So there are definitely teams that could use Teletovic. I'm not sure. So, maybe it could just be more of a selling asset accumulation a little bit, but, Teletovic isn't getting you a first round pick again. So what's the point? I'm talking a little bit too extemporaneously here. I should say this before we go any further. I don't expect them to do anything. Do you agree with that?
I totally do. And yeah, I have lofty dreams, but very limited expectations.
Yeah, and they also want to see what they're going to have in Thonmaker, whether maybe he can just be their center of the future if he fills out a little bit. He is 7 foot. He can shoot the ball. He's mobile. As long as he could fill out a little bit, he might actually be able to, and he'll have to be able to defensive rebound too. He's a long way away. But he presumably is still in their plans. They've gotten a lot out of Malcolm Brogdon as well. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that, I don't think they're far enough along yet to really know. And they also haven't seen Chris Middleton back yet playing with this version of Giannis and Jabari either. I think they need a little bit more information there as well. So I would expect them to just stand pat, make their first round pick with especially if they miss the playoffs, with the idea that this is going to be our last lottery pick for a while. And then in the offseason, they've seen Middleton with these guys, and they can start to perhaps fill in around them a little bit better, because I do think that a lot of their supporting pieces are inadequate at this point.
Plus, since they'd be going, presumably they'd be looking at guys that are under contract, their contracts aren't going anywhere, so the basic fundamentals that are in place would still be in place then.
Yeah, they're only pending free agent. One would be Monroe if he were to opt out, which, yeah, probably about 50-50 whether he does that or not. He's owed $17.9 million for next year. And then Tony Snell, who will be a restricted free agent. Pretty small cap hold, $5.9 million. A guy who I think could be an okay enough backup shooting guard whom they may look to potentially re-sign.
And they can't move him anyway until they know what they have in Middleton. Like, that's too much of a risk for them.
Yeah. I mean, if Middleton just re-injures his hamstring, or just, you know, isn't the same guy and it takes him a while to get back, like all that, yeah, it seems unlikely they would move him. All right, we done here? I think that's about all I had on the Bucks, unless you had anything else.
That's it.
All right, since we're feeling spry, why don't we continue on here, do a little bit of the Southwest Division as well, since we are in a little time pressure to finish all these before we do our mock trade deadline over the weekend. Let's go on to the Dallas Mavericks here, who I think should be in just absolute sell everything that's not tied down mode, but they may not do that.
They might not. They have complications from a personality standpoint. Jaren Williams arguably took a pay cut to stay there. Andrew Bogut chose to join their team and might prefer to get bought out. But I agree with you in terms of principle. And they're in a tough spot because they probably want to keep their picks at this point, considering they don't know how good they're going to be. They have all their own firsts and no extra firsts. And then they have all their own seconds plus the Warriors 2019. So pretty much just the standard. And they don't have any cap space at the moment. They're a little bit under the luxury tax line, but the expectation would be that if they made a trade, they would be shedding salary rather than adding it.
Yeah, and also there's just the issue that Dirk Nowitzki, they've kept him for a long time, and they want to theoretically be as competitive as possible and not just sell off pieces. Now, if players just want a buyout, that's one thing, but also they're now, they beat the Cavs last night handily. They're now 7-3 in their last 10. They probably still think they have a decent chance of the playoffs. The Nuggets lost tonight to the Lakers. So I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens over these next really 5-6 games going into the All-Star break to determine like what's going to happen there. The thing is though, that even the guys that they would look to move, Bogut in the last year of his contract, same thing, he's making $11 million. Jaren Williams making $9 million. He'll be a free agent again. Although Williams, they'll at least have early bird rights, so they might be able to re-sign him. Bogut has talked about very likely moving on already. Williams, probably not going to get you a first round pick. Neither is Bogut at this point, despite what some executive told Tim McMahon earlier. I disagreed with it then. I disagree even more now that he's out again with yet another hamstring injury aggravation. So I think they were certainly going to listen on those guys. If they can get a deal that would help, they would move them. But I don't think so. I think it's just more likely they kind of stand pat. And then if those guys want to get bought out before the March 1st deadline to play for another team in the playoffs, that's what they'll do.
Outside of those players, they have some young guys that could be fits, could not be fits. But this, like with the veterans, doesn't seem like the right time to make a decision. Justin Anderson has not been a major part of the rotation, still on rookie scale for another couple of years. Salah Mejri has a non-guarantee for next year and then is restricted, and Dorian Finney-Smith has actually made a nice little role for himself, and he has another couple of years, so I expect them to keep all those guys as well.
Yeah, Mejri will be he actually has another non-guaranteed year
right
now, and maybe he's someone who could help a team, but again, what are you giving up for him? Why not just hold on to him at that point? Yeah, I don't think it's really going to be that sexy of a trade deadline for these guys, because there's just nobody that, even if they want to punt, there's not really that much sexy that they could get back for some of these guys.
Devin Harris also has a small partial guarantee for next year, not that big a salary either, and he's been largely supplanted by Seth Curry and numerous other guys, but I don't see a market for him either.
Yeah, another potential buyout guy. He's really just kind of a fourth, fifth guard type at this point, especially when you consider the difficulty that he has had staying healthy with those numerous toe injuries. I mean, is there anything else to say about these guys? I mean, maybe we're just done. That was quick.
Yeah, I think Houston could be another quick one, even though their situation's a little more interesting. But Houston has the problem, I guess you could call it, of liking the players they have. And so when you like the players you have, it's a lot harder to make a move.
Well, what do they need, Houston? I think they have really enough at center, probably. I think they could just use one more guy on the wing who isn't named Corey Brewer who can play. KJ McDaniels, they obviously don't believe in him. They might also just try to find a way to shed Corey Brewer's salary, although that would be more likely to come in the offseason if they were to do that. And he's due $7.6 million next year. I'm looking at that as basically dead salary, but maybe another team wouldn't, especially maybe a team that just wants to get a vet in who, you know, help him reach the salary floor, that kind of stuff. Brewer certainly could be matching salary going out, although again, that's a liability for next year that another team is not necessarily going to want to take on. But I think if you're really trying to upgrade, that's what I'm looking for, is just one more guy who can play on the wing next to Sam Decker. And I'm looking at the Warriors in particular as a team that I would need that other combo forward type of guy to play against.
I feel that need as well. And my secondary one, and this would also be a buyout potentially, is another guard who can actually play. They have a wonderful rotation when all three guys are healthy in Harden, Beverly, and Eric Gordon. But we saw this already during the season that they don't have a fourth guy. And even if they're just a steward playing 10 to 15 minutes when somebody else gets hurt, that would make a substantial difference for them. Tyler Ennis is not that answer. I don't think KJ McDaniels is the answer to either of those questions, either the guy to play with Decker or the backup guard situation. So I don't think they need to use a first round pick for it. They have all their own firsts and they have two seconds. They have Denver's and Portland's. They do not have their own. So they could go after that in some way if the right person was available for either of those roles, but those will be hard to get, especially since the Rockets, I'm assuming, would rather get somebody who's at least on a reasonable deal moving forward instead of having to worry about re-signing them.
Their cap situation for next summer, as of this moment, if they were to move on from KJ McDaniels, Nene on a one-year deal, Tyler Ennis, they're going to move on from him. Presumably they declined his rookie option. They could get to $12.5 million in space. If you knock Brewer off of there, now you're at $20 million. That's enough to actually do something. You could probably pick up another starter in free agency with that level of flexibility. Maybe another thing that they might consider doing would be trading for someone, again, who's going to be a free agent, someone who's under contract for maybe another year or so after this. Throw Brewer in, and maybe then they might be willing to trade a first-round pick at that point. But I think, you look at the hits that they usually have with these picks, Decker, Clint Capella, they had to give up the pick that eventually became, I think it was Wancho, actually, that number 16 pick, or number 15 pick, rather. That hurts. It would be great to have Wancho on the team.
So he might be the guy who'd fit next to Sam Decker.
Yeah, yeah. Of all the teams that would be loath to give up on a first-rounder, I think it would be them, because they had Harrell, another guy who they drafted early in the second, who turned out to be pretty good. Even Isaiah Cannon, who they drafted in the second round, isn't playing for the Bulls. He at least has been in the league for a couple of years. That's better than you normally expect for a second rounder. So it really, I think, would have to be something fantastic for them to give up their first rounder. But that first rounder is probably going to be 26, 25, something like that, considering they're projected to have the third best record in the league right now. It could even get as high as 28.
What do you think about KJ McDaniels? Would you be trying to trade him now? Because he has this
him as a zero at this point for them.
Well, yeah,
I would be surprised if they even, they're probably going to decline his option, make him a restricted free agent. Maybe he would just take a qualifying offer and come back, but he hasn't been able to get on the floor, and he's older now. He's going to be 24. So if he can't contribute now, it's probably not going to happen for him, or at least they're feeling that way about him.
Which means it's a great time to see if anybody else is interested on him just as a flyer. Because if you're going to.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone will be, was my point. Yeah.
Probably not.
I would certainly listen, but. Yeah, if someone were willing to take Corey Brewer along as
the Nets,
sweetener, sure.
If you were the Nets and basically the Rockets didn't have any interest in him, wouldn't you rather have him for the next couple months than some of the other guys they have?
Yeah, probably. I think maybe KJ on a team that's not trying to win could get a little bit of playing time. But they've needed his services these last 2 years, and he hasn't been able to get on the floor. So I think that's rather telling.
And they could be another team. They're another team that I think does a decent job, though they do better with draft picks, of finding talent just in other ways, and maybe they could even just have a better use of that roster spot.
Pretty impressive. impressive for Daryl Morey that they spent as much as they did last year, and yet they're still going to be in a position where they could have almost $20 million in space. I mean, they and the Celtics are looking like are probably going to be the only good teams that have space. And, you know, that they could be an underrated potential team this offseason. But I think that's why I don't see them necessarily messing that up. I mean, even if it's totally within their control, they could even stretch Brewer and get to, you know, $17 million or so.
Sure. And they could even attach, they have all these other assets, they could attach something else to it if they wanted to.
Yeah, that's true too. They also have Sergio Yule, mm-hmm. who is the theoretically under, I think he's going to be either 29 or 30 this offseason. A guy who I think could be a backup combo guard, a good player for Real Madrid. He's under contract there, has said that he's probably not going to come over, but he's someone who could have a little bit more value for a team that just had the cap space to burn and just wanted to, you know, to use him as a backup point guard that could pay him. You know, I think once you get to where you could pay him like 3 years for $8 million a year, I mean, that's the other thing too. Maybe they could just bring him over on the mid-level exception if they stay over the cap, using their cap space to get him. Zoki, also, I think, who they want to bring over next year, second round pick, extremely long Chinese center who's painfully thin but has some good translated stats from the Chinese league. His age a little bit unclear. Alessandro Gentile as well, another combo forward type, plays for the Italian national team, has had some flashes. Someone might value him a little bit. So they do, as you mentioned, have some arrows in the quiver here. I mean, let's say they just decided, hey, we're willing to give up a first round pick here. Damn the Torpedoes this summer. We want to get as good as we can this year. Who would be a potential target for them? And if you're giving up that first round pick, you probably want to get someone who has a reasonable contract and is under, you know, what about Wilson Chandler? That's probably not enough to get it done for him, I'm thinking.
Yeah, and also he doesn't really bring something different to them. He's more of like a kind of a backup for a guy that they already have and they really like. Ariza's having a nice year.
Trevor Ariza is going to get old at some point though. Like they need to,
but so is Wilson Chandler.
Just be his replacement.
Chandler's
a little, I mean, I think Ariza's going to be 32 this offseason or next. I can't remember which, but Chandler is like in his late 20s. He's got a couple more years there. I'm not sure if there's any, I mean, none of the usual suspects like PJ Tucker, those type of guys could be useful. This team, though, doesn't have such the type of need maybe that a team like the Cavs does, because they do have a good guy coming off the bench in Decker who kind of can play that role a little bit already.
The guys that I like for they shouldn't spend that obviously on a center, even though they don't have a lot of those guys long term, unless they buy Harrell as being a long term fit, and Capella, you know, he's going to get expensive soon enough, so they shouldn't spend it there. They're happy with their guards, so if you can get a decent wing for it, but I just don't know who's going to be available for that price.
No, I'm not really sure either, frankly, so I wouldn't expect a ton of noise out of them. They do not have their room exception, so won't be as much of a player on the buyout market. They use that on Nene, of course, which was a fantastic signing. Yeah, not a lot out there for them. I think we can move on. They might try and get creative, but I think they're happy with how things are going. I think Daryl is pretty realistic that they're not going to beat the Warriors no matter what they do. So hold on a little bit longer, try to make a big score in the offseason, and then, you know, maybe the Warriors aren't as good next year and you can really hope to compete for a championship then.
And they'll also have a much better idea of what the Spurs are like then, which is another piece of the puzzle for them. If the Spurs, you know, what Pau Gasol does with his option, if Deadman leaves, they could be a little bit vulnerable as well.
All right, the Memphis Grizzlies, another team I would expect to be relatively quiet. That's why we're doing all these right now, because they're pretty easy.
They are. Memphis is additionally constrained because of all the first round picks that they owe. They owe a first to Denver, which is almost definitely going to convey this year. I think we're getting very close to it being locked in. Then 2 years after that starts
that pick, by the way, protected 1 through 5. So yes,
correct.
It will certainly
exactly.
Convey.
So then, assuming they convey that pick this year, they have a future obligation to the Boston Celtics, which is top 8 protected in 2019 if they can convey it, top 6 in 2020, and then unprotected in 2021. And
God, that was an awful trade, by the way, for Jeff Green. Like, to not make that pick lottery protected, pretty crazy.
Especially considering it was for Jeff Green. Jeff Green has been the wrong part of trades so many times in his career. He's one of a few different guys that's happened where he's just, you know, the team that got him was the loser in the trade. And Memphis, they have their own second round picks after this year, but they have this interesting thing. I originally read it incorrectly, that they have Miami's second round pick if it's 31-40, so it's reverse protected. So if Miami finishes with one of the 10 worst records, then Memphis gets the pick. So that actually could be a pretty nice little thing for them.
Yeah, I think it actually goes to somebody else if it's not one of the 10
worst records. Well might, yeah. It very well might.
But that's not bad. And then they have that Clippers lottery protected first as well. So they've got a little bit of ammunition. If you look at the age of their players, you would have to say that this is their best chance to compete. If you squint really hard, maybe they could be the sixth seed, pull an upset in the first two rounds over the Spurs and Rockets, get to the final, the West Finals, and get summarily beaten, although they're the only team that's beaten the Warriors twice this year, so they've got that going for them. But it's tough really to see when you're already out those two picks, are you going to make another trade for future assets? I mean, is there anyone on the roster that you look at as an asset that they could potentially move?
Not for somebody who can help them a lot right now. Jarrell Martin is interesting, but I don't think this is the right time to move him or to really go after it.
And don't forget, they need some of these guys as insurance too, in case Zebo leaves in the offseason. He could be a free agent.
I think if Deontay Davis more for that role, for the insurance role, I don't think they're going to trade him at all, but Jarrell Martin can still play. I don't love him, but I certainly don't hate him. And Wade Baldwin hasn't proven a lot. We talked about him. You mentioned him a little bit when we talked about the D-League showcase. And then Andrew Harrison is fine. You know, he's done a nice job this year. I've been impressed with him, but I still like him a lot better as a fourth or fifth guard than anything else.
Yeah, what about Brandon Wright? We talked about him potentially as someone who might move to one of these backup center needy teams. Would you, in Memphis's shoes, be willing to give up on him for just a second round pick that would be like, you know, the 45th pick or something? And whatever salary flotsam came back that expired at the end of this year.
45 is probably pushing it a little bit just because those selections are just so low in value. But 40, maybe around 40, I'd be pretty happy with.
Well, presumably the team that's trading for him is a team that's in playoff position realistically.
That's true. Yeah, there are a few of those picks. I usually keep a list. I haven't actually put it together this year of picks in the top half of the second round that aren't held by the teams with those records. And those would be the targets that you'd be looking at. I think New Orleans has one of those actually, but they do not need another center.
Yeah, no, that is the case. They do not. And again, Wright could be someone that they would need next year. You don't necessarily want to be relying on Davis as your backup center going into next year. Wright, of course, has health problems. I saw him play a little bit in that blowout against Phoenix last night, and he looked relatively spry. It was good to see him just moving around there. He had a couple of those little short hooks in the lane off the pick and roll. Looked okay. So like the 45 pick, you're probably not going to do it for you. I think I probably agree there. I mean, unless
they could move him over the summer too, because somebody's, as much as we've talked about how the center market is oversaturated, 1 year, about $6 million is a reasonable enough price that somebody could just pull the trigger on him, kind of like what the Lakers did with Roy Hibbert about, you know, we can't really do better than this realistically on the market.
And they may want to just move on from his salary too, because Tony Allen is going to be a free agent. Zach Randolph is going to be a free agent. Jamichael Green, a restricted free agent whom they're going to need to re-sign. And if they were to bring all three of those guys back, they also have, or maybe they lose one of them and they use, they'll have full bird rights on all those guys. And actually, I'm not sure about Green. Green might only be early bird rights, but close enough. Or they might want to use their full mid-level exception. And then you're actually getting kind of close to the tax if you were to bring all those guys back. They're basically going to be right at the cap before you're even talking about those guys, and you really only have about $19 million over the cap before you get into the tax. So maybe they would want to just move right for that reason, because he is under contract for next year at $5.9 million. But again, and maybe if he is looking semi-healthy, it's like, well, we better trade him now before he breaks down again, that kind of a thing.
It looks like Jamichael Green, actually, they have full bird rights due to that fun thing that the first year of a player's tenure with the team does not have to be a full season, because he actually started that year on the Spurs and then was eventually on the Grizzlies.
That's right. I couldn't remember whether that was the case or they signed him in the offseason. I know he's been on there at least 2 years. So, and obviously a good signing for them. Anything else that you wanted to say about them before we call it quits here?
No, they're a sleeper for the idea of maybe surprising a little bit with a small move. They have done a great job of identifying talent on the margins. Ennis was one of the best signings of last offseason, and if they can make one or two kind of moves like that, it would be great. But there aren't that many players available that are really undervalued and underidentified in the league. It's a lot harder
to get. Well, you know, actually, what I was going to say is that in that vein, and they also, they just signed Tony Douglas, waived Troy Williams, who they'll have the D-League rights on him if he doesn't get claimed. But Douglas played for them a little bit earlier. He's back now to be a really fourth point guard, although he'll probably play over someone like Wade Baldwin. But their backup point guard is Andrew Harrison. He's exceeded expectations this year, but they might decide, hey, we really could use a veteran here. They do not have the room exception. They use that on Ennis. So they have limited resources available to go and get that backup point guard. Maybe that Miami pick might be what they would look at there as a way to do that. Is there anyone who is a pending free agent that maybe they could try to grab? I mean, what about Brandon Jennings if the Knicks were to fall out of it completely? That might be the type of player that they might look at.
That's a move I would make if I were the Knicks. So yeah, and he'd be an upgrade over the guys they have, at least in terms of stability. They could use him. I'm good with that.
Yeah, I mean, now that they wouldn't have any bird rights on him to re-sign him, which would be too bad. Not a ton else. I mean, it could also be a destination for one of the Jazz extra point guards, just to get somebody else who isn't going to kill you in there. I think would be nice for them, especially if you're going to be in the playoffs. I don't know how much I'm going to trust Andrew Harrison in the playoffs. I don't think that they probably would want to play Houston over the Spurs, I would imagine. So they'll probably be trying to get the sixth seed. We'll see whether OKC can stay in it or not. OKC is looking a little rough now that Cantor has gotten injured. But I think they're going to want to be able to find a way to reduce Mike Conley's minutes going into the playoffs. That's for sure.
Absolutely. They certainly should. And I would say that they could be interested in Chalmers. But I think if the Cavs turn him down, I keep doing that with LeBron's former team and his current team. If the Cavs turn him down in this flotsam tryout, then that's probably a sign, if he loses out to Heinrich or Jordan Farmer or Lance Stevenson, that he's not all the way back.
Could they be a destination for Rajon Rondo if he were to get bought out?
I don't think he's burned a bridge there, so maybe.
I mean, they have success with difficult personalities in Memphis. I think they are believers there. I'm trying to think if there are any other point guards who are on a reasonable contract, because I think that good Miami second rounder is probably too much to give up just for a backup point guard for the end of this year on this team. I mean, you don't really necessarily have championship aspirations for this Memphis team. But maybe if it were a guy who were also under contract for next year, it would be something that you might think about. But I'm not really seeing any.
Like Tim Frazier? He's under contract for next year, I think $2 million. You don't usually see many trades within a division, but he's been pretty marginalized when they've been healthy. But at the same point, you can't rely on New Orleans, their guys being healthy.
That's right. And they also could lose Jrue Holiday. They could lose Tyreke Evans this offseason, and he would be really their only point guard under contract for next year. So they would not necessarily be that interested. But yeah, that's a good thought, though. That might be something. And he seems like the type of guy they might target. But, you know, they have Baldwin already. They invested the first rounder in him. Maybe they wouldn't think about that. But that's really the obvious need that they have to upgrade going into the playoffs, because I don't think Harrison has exceeded expectations. He plays decent defense. He gets to the foul line, and he also has like an 8 PER on the season. All right, I think we're done here now.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. We always appreciate people who give us iTunes reviews or ratings. That helps spread the word about the show. We are actually featured in the new and noteworthy section of like all of iTunes, not even the sports section, I think in large part because of those reviews. So that was something that we really appreciated from our listeners. And in that same vein, don't forget about our sponsors today, distilled.com/capspace. distilled.com/capspace is the URL to get 10% off your first pair of jeans. And Blue Apron as well. Actually, we recorded the ad earlier. I then made those hoisin chicken steamed buns, and they were awesome.
I'm glad you liked them.
blueapron.com/capspace will get you your first three meals free with free shipping there. And of course, let them know that you came from us. Scheduling, gonna hopefully have a really cool guest on for tomorrow's episode. And then we got the Twitter NBA show on Thursday night. We will not be running that as a Dunked On simulcast because we got to get all of these trade deadline previews out there as well. Who are the games on Thursday, by the way? Do you know?
Warriors Clippers is the second game, and I am trying to remember what the first game is. Oh yeah, it's the Dwight Howard return game, Atlanta Houston.
That'll be an interesting one, actually. I'm looking forward to seeing the Hawks and talking about them on the Twitter NBA show. And then of course the mock off season, we're going to try and record that over the weekend and hope to have that first episode out as close to Sunday night as possible. That one takes a little more editing than the usual show, but that's what's required if it's going to make it look like I won all my trades. All right, catch y'all next time.